Hi, guys and girls, and thanks for joining us again on another Team LRF podcast. Today, we are joined by one of Europe's leading bodybuilding promoters, Ian Constable. Ian, just introduce yourself if the viewers don't know who you are.
Ian Constable, basically, I run Two Bros Pro in accordance with the IFBB Pro League and NPC Worldwide.
Awesome. And Ian, if the listeners don't know the difference between the Two Bros as an organization, as the NPC as an organization, could you just explain briefly what the differences are?
Well, from the very outset, one of the main reasons why I didn't want to be NPC Worldwide or IFBB Pro League is because I've always seen that there comes this sort of ego with this whole association with the IFBB Pro League and the NPC. It's like an authority thing. So I've always wanted to be, as I've always seen it, is there's a promoter and then there's the federation. So, and the two aren't mixed. So basically what happens with that setup is that the IFBB Pro League and the NPC supply the judges. They're responsible for what happens from the minute the athlete steps on stage up until the point where the athlete steps off stage. Anything else around that is all to do with me. So production, tickets, organisation, everything's down to me. I have no, and nor do I want any interest in what the judges do. And that's paramount to how I run a show, because my main focus is always on, obviously, the right person winning. And to prove to the athletes and prospective sponsors that the difference between the promoter and the NPC, there's a big line in between, because I couldn't judge a show. Obviously, I have my opinions, but I couldn't judge a show, and nor do I want to see that crossover. And the reason why I make that very plain and clear is because every other three-letter, four-letter federation, whatever they call themselves, that I've ever seen, all have judges that are prep coaches that happen to be the most popular prep coaches. They have people, supplement companies, you know, people own federations that run a supplement company and promote their supplement through the federation. And they also do lots of things that, for me, it's called a hint of impropriety. So what that means is if there can be any kind of question over the judging, because it's a supplement company, because it's a coach, you know, I don't want that. I don't want any athlete to feel that they've stepped on stage and all the hard work that they've put in could possibly be thrown out the window because one of the judges is someone else's coach and they won. Even if they won fairly, it still doesn't, it's still not a good feel for the athlete to walk away wondering whether they got that decision because that judge on the bench coaches that person next year. And this is one of the things, and I'm sure you're aware of this, Rob, because you've been around longer than me. This is one of the things that I always heard coming into this industry about the UK BFF, about how the, you know, the most popular judges, prep coaches, posing coaches, was like Helen and Sean Panther. They were like, I always heard their names.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they were two people who were judging, they were prepping, they were doing posing and so on and so forth. So yeah, there was definitely, you know, like you said, like a bit of an indiscrepancy there between trying to, you know, trying to maybe take yourself away as a judge and look at that person independently because you know them personally as well. And obviously that doesn't matter what journey they've gone through. But, you know, like you say, I do sometimes think that, and I've always said it as well, that I don't think judges should be coaches and coaches should be judges and so on and so forth. So yeah, I agree with you completely.
You know, the other thing is I don't want to give the athletes a reason because, you know, the first couple of days after a show, there's always a lot of emotions. You know, you've just finished prep, you've had a big highlight, you've looked back on all the work that you've done and you've come, you know, maybe fourth, you know, and people sometimes for that first couple of days, this is why we always leave judges feedback for a couple of days, just to let the dust settle. Initially, people will always think of another reason or something why it's that, why they finished this for, because, you know, they've got a lot of friends supporting them. They've got a lot of people on social media looking at them. So they feel that they have to justify why they didn't win. But the thing that people get caught up in is, I've seen classes where there's no difference between 10th place and first place. And when I say no difference, to the naked eye, to my eye, and literally the decisions are made on an absolute hair's width in order to be able to make sure that the judges have placed them. I mean, I'm sure you've obviously come across that yourself.
Oh, absolutely, loads of times. You know, people think because they come second rather than first that every judge has put them a second, where potentially they could have a very, very split decision and it'd be down to one person.
Yeah, and that's what I see. I do see that a lot of time. Obviously, there's classes where, you know, someone's finished fifth and they were, again, I don't like to use the words worst in the class, but they didn't fit the criteria as much. And again, I always make it clear to people that this isn't a sprint, you know, this isn't a one-time deal where you step on and you win. You know, it's one of them things where you never know who you're going to stand next to on the day. You know, last week you could have come fifth on a really tough lineup, and the following week you could compete and come first because your competition wasn't that good that week and you happen to be the best on the stage. So you can't never compare show to show. You know, one of the other issues I get is someone who's finished third, second, and then they come sixth. And they suddenly like, well, how can this happen? It's because you're standing next to different people. Because obviously the people that turned up on that sort of penultimate show had maybe been competing 10 years, you know, or just have a certain genetics or have a better coach. So sure. This is one of the other things people need to get clear to people is that every time you step on stage, so long as you have beaten your previous physique, you can't do any more of that. What happens on the day happens on the day. You know, I'm sure you deal with this yourself.
Absolutely. And the thing is, it happens at every single level. You know, it happens at every level. It doesn't just happen at the amateur level, even when you go into the pro level. You know, you get guys who have come out the Olympia and placed third or fourth, and another guy placed 10th. And the next show, the guy that placed 10th beat the guy who placed third or fourth. So it doesn't just happen at like an amateur level. It happens at all levels because, like you say, like judging is based on the day. Who is the best on the day? And there could be a number of reasons as to why that is, for sure.
I mean, the main thing is you focus on yourself, but you've got to accept everyone else you're competing against that day is focusing on themselves as well. You know, so regardless of how much work you've put in, how much your mum has seen you or your girlfriend or your boyfriend, and they really believe that they can't believe the work effort you've done, on which none of us can, but everyone's doing that. Everyone that stepped on stage is doing the same, giving it 110%. So you've got to just understand that this is a long process, and it's just the whole purpose of this industry and what we do is about improvements, and just continuing with the lifestyle, because that's another thing. It's actually a lifestyle. I know people say, I'm in prep and what have you, but it doesn't stop at just, you know, your 12 or 14 week prep, does it?
No, it's year round for sure. Yeah, year round for sure. So moving on to obviously the growth of Two Rosie, and you know, I was privileged enough to be at the first show, see the first show down in Stratford a few years ago now. And that year there was only maybe five or six shows, and now we're looking at, like, you know, 20 plus and expansion into different countries. What's brought about that expansion, and was that always the goal for you guys?
Well, the first year there was four shows. And that was because you need to tread carefully. You know, I've watched the UK BFF, I watched the PCA, I watched the NPC in America, and I just looked at all of the things that they've done and took a little piece out of everything. You know, coming in and turning up and putting 40 shows on with some shows that have got 20 people in just didn't work for me. You know, it was a case of seeing how saturated and, you know, some of these federations just think because they've got 30 shows, they're like amazing. And I mean, to me, that's just ridiculous. My point is to gradually grow and watch the numbers grow in order to constitute adding more shows. You know, I don't want a show with 20 people in. I never have done. I don't think it's fair to the athletes. And also there's a cost implication as well. You know, what a lot of people don't understand is the sort of costs that are involved to run a show. You know, and sometimes we've been putting shows on in the past There's no money to be made in them. It's literally to keep the brand going in order to make sure that everybody understands our commitment and what we do, you know, under certain circumstances. So I always wanted to grow slowly but surely in order to make sure that the athlete experience was, you know, they had people to compete against. You know, they weren't just turning up in order just to, you know, for the purpose of my promotion to say I've got 30 shows on. That was, my promotion's about how people are treated at the show, how they feel, how they were, how they enjoyed the day. You know, it was never about, my mindset isn't about me, isn't about how great Two Bros is. It's about everybody who's been there telling everybody else how much they enjoyed it, you know. And again, you have to be sustainable. That's a big word that I learned whilst I was working in Dubai for 7 years, is sustainability. You know, you can turn up and you can put 20 shows on, and before you know it, the following year, you haven't got any because you can't afford to pay for them because you've just blown everything up. So my point was always to be sustainable in order to make sure that we could grow gradually, as when the athletes came in and when the athletes stayed with us, you know, because that's the whole aim of the game, in order to have someone come in for a first time, enjoy the experience, and just basically continue their journey with us. And one of the main things for me is the fact that we have got that journey. You know, it's about proving to people that this isn't just a federation that's a one-hit wonder. You know, this federation's been around 40, 50 years, you know. And Phil Heath, Mr. Olympia, you know, he turned up as a first timer one day. And then he became a beginner, novice, open, and then went on to the pro league, and then eventually, obviously, the Mr. Olympia, and then won the Mr. Olympia. But no one else can do that, you know, and that's what people need to understand, is that if you're going to enjoy something, you want to start your journey, you know, like I said, lifestyle, you know, you want to come and watch shows, you want to come and see, watch other athletes progress as well. You know, if you're in the world of bodybuilding, you don't want to just see, you know, Jim Smith turning up every week and winning the same show, because it's boring. It's not entertaining. So it's always good to see the progression from an athlete turning up as a nobody and watching them grow, obviously on Instagram and social media, and then achieving these things. You know, it's the ultimate thing to want to see. And then obviously you watch them turn into coaches. You know, because of the experience they've gained. You know, they've been prepping, they've been to the shows, you know, and then they get a following where they suddenly become the people that they looked up to.
Absolutely, yeah. I think from our side of things as well, in terms of coaches and athletes, there was, you know, as understandably, there was a part of skepticism, you know, when people first brought this over, because obviously other federations had promised, you know, we're going to give pro cards, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and it obviously never came to fruition. And now, obviously, when people were, you know, back in, what was it, 2018, 2017, 2018, wasn't it? It was, people were saying, oh, you know, Two Bros were going to give out pro cards, and everybody was a little bit skeptical. And obviously, we went to that first show with great hype, great excitement. It was a great show. It was a long old day. And at the end of the day, we had pro cards, which is something in the UK we never had. You know, we never had. We had to wait once a year, and it was never guaranteed. So I think there was a side of skepticism, but now, obviously, that's been, through Two Bros putting on these shows, giving out the cards, fulfilling what they said, not only in terms of the cards, but promising these shows and putting them on during a year of pandemic as well. You know, people have that trust within the brand now. And like you said, it's been definitely a growing brand for sure. So the expansion of the federation is obviously has been rapid, but is there any further plans to expand further than what you're doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, what I always like to do is I need to focus on, first and foremost, the athlete experience, making sure the organization's correct, making sure that we aren't, you know, I'm not going to go and hire the Royal Albert Hall because it looks good for me. I'm going to hire a venue that works for the athletes, for the backstage, for the staff, for the judges, and then see how that progresses before I then go up to the next level. You know, hopefully one day I'm hiring the Albert Hall. But if I'd done it this year, there wouldn't be a company next year. So it has to be in relation to the growth. You know, I've been in business a lot of years, and not obviously bodybuilding, but a lot of other businesses. And the structure is the same. Doesn't matter whether it's train doors or bioorganic catalysts or coffee shops, it's the same procedure throughout. And anybody with that sort of experience will tell you exactly the same. There's a method in it. There's a 3-year method. There's a don't run before you can walk. We've all heard that. Yeah. So this is what I do. I tread carefully. I do not listen to anything as to what other federations do. It's irrelevant to me. They don't have what we have. They don't have my financial commitments. They don't have my outlook. They don't even have my experience, if I'm honest with you. But this is why I don't allow listening to any of this negative talk. I don't follow anybody. I generally, if I get anything negative, they get blocked. I'm very focused only on what we do, you know, and sometimes, you know, we do make the odd mistake because we're trying, it's trial and error. You know, for the majority of the time, we, you know, we're not perfect. We try and deliver what we promised. And, you know, I'll as you know, climb mountains, swim seas in order to deliver what I promised. And I don't generally let anything stop me very easily in order to deliver that. If I can find a way to do it, I will. As you might have appreciated the fact that we put on the shows in the pandemic, we found a way. It wasn't pretty. We had some issues with it. You know, police and local councils, and then there was obviously the jealous brigade that were trying to get us cancelled by sending in emails and fake phone calls in order to get it called off. But again, we rose above it all because we were always 10 steps above ahead of everyone to make sure that we put the show on. Even without spectators, it didn't matter. We were just giving people who wanted to, you know, we didn't make anybody do anything. We were just giving people a goal throughout the pandemic. And it gave us a goal as well, you know. Putting on a show outside was the first. It was because of the conditions at that time. And we used the tools that we had available. I mean, we couldn't have the all singing and dancing production, but at the end of the day, it was a show. It was shows, should I say, that went on that gave people a service. And, you know, we've gone from a show in a marquee in March to the NEC in October. Mm. You know, it's completely chalk and cheese to have a show outside to then have the NEC with 5,000 spectators and a pro show and the Arnold Classic. So we're versatile, you know, we'll do what we need to do in order to service, you know, in those situations. I don't care if it was 20 athletes, you know, it kept me busy as well. Mm. But it gave me a goal in order to be able to achieve against adversity.
Absolutely, no, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. And from a coaching perspective, and I know from an athlete's perspective, they were very, very much appreciative of that show because, like you say, it gave them something to work towards during lockdown. Even coming out of lockdown, you know, people were still in shape because they knew shows were happening. And even like it just set a precedent to say that, you know what, we will deliver what we promise. We say there's going to be a show because obviously shows are being cancelled left, right, and centre. We say there's going to be a show on this day. Continue to work with us and we will provide you a show. And obviously, created that platform, which is great.
I mean, don't get me wrong, we couldn't do it without the support of the athletes, you know, and obviously the athletes that were DMing us and sort of giving us support also made us try harder, you know. I know that obviously some of the other federations just literally closed shop and then, again, tried to turn it against us, the fact that we put on a show by saying about our production. Well, you know, these were the tools we had. This is all we could do. So that's what we've done. We never gave up and we never will do, even no matter what goes on from now till then. It's the same. We're going to have the same attitude. You know, if I had to have a show in my lounge, I would.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, and again, people do. I think people who are invested appreciate that. I think people who are negative and don't appreciate that. So, yeah, I'm not. Yeah, as I said, from our side of things, or from a coach's side of things, from an athlete side of things, I didn't hear any grumbles. I didn't hear any grumbles. It was more very much positive. I'm so glad I got to compete. I'm finally getting to compete. I'm now ready to compete again later down the line. And you know what? If they say there's going to be a show on this day, I have full faith that there's going to be a show on this day, which is awesome. We spoke about the pro card a few times, Ian, and obviously there are different ways to earn your pro card within the IFBB Pro League. But what does being a pro mean to you in terms of what you would expect from these guys who then get rewarded their pro card?
as you know, I came into this industry in about 2016, okay? So a pro back in the day was like God, you know? They were like the highest coveted person because there was so little of them. And then I went from seeing how the, you know, basically UK BFF behaved to then going to America. And then I saw the difference in what it meant to be a pro, you know, and you got to understand there's 50 million people in UK and there's 400 million people in America. So to see the sort of godlike figures in the UK and then to see the pros, how they felt about being a pro, because I wasn't in contact with any of the pros in the UK then, I just had the perception of what they were. They lived and breathed the fact that they were a pro, okay? And to this day, it's the same in America. You know, a pro is fully committed to the pro league. They're fully committed to the NPC. They appreciate where they came from. They appreciate their journey. They absolutely love the pro league and respond to their accolade of being a pro. They wouldn't tag another federation. They wouldn't turn up to another federation's event. They wouldn't dream of giving medals out at another federation's event. They wouldn't dream of going on a poster for another federation's event. And I have plenty of conversations about this, obviously with the pro league, is that they cannot understand the mentality of some of the European pros that, you know, they go through all this hardship. They come up the levels, beginners, novice, everything, to become a pro. And when they become a pro, they suddenly think that they don't have an allegiance to the pro league. They suddenly think that they are beyond, you know, approach. So it amazes me that how people suddenly operate as a pro, even when they're coaches, you know. So even when they're coaches, you know, the only thing that I don't understand is that as an IFBB pro, why you wouldn't make sure that every athlete under your control or how you coach them doesn't understand that the only place to compete would be the NPC and the IFBB Pro League. Because I hear this, you know, oh, they're not ready for two bros. Oh, they're going to just do this federation first. But it's like, what? How can you have a first time as beginners? There is no ready. You don't have someone that's really bad in beginners. You know, the same people that go to these other federations are the same people that can go in first time as beginners and novice, you know, and then they can build themselves up to open. So what happens is that the pros seem to lose a little bit of touch with how much work they themselves put into becoming a pro and what it meant to them to be a pro, because they're not, you know, conveying the same message to their athletes. So it becomes a little bit strange for the pro league to hear this coming from the American background, where they are completely loyal to the pro league, to then hearing what the pros do here. And again, this is one of the things that's come in. Obviously, anybody, and I keep posting it as well, that, you know, when you're a pro, you cannot endorse another federation. You cannot promote another federation. You know, there's a lot of rules to being a pro, which all, you know, they're all around, have some loyalty, have some respect for what you've achieved. You know, keep the integrity of being a pro. So when, what happens is when you become a pro, all these other small federations suddenly make a beeline for you because they understand what it is to be a pro. That's why they want you to come to their show, to endorse it, to give it credibility. But what you're doing is you're losing your own integrity by doing this, because you're getting caught up with the fact that you think someone's interested in you because you're a pro. That's the part where you've got to show some sort of mentality and say, no, I'm a pro. That wouldn't be appropriate to show the proper respect to my accolade of becoming a pro. And so basically now what they've put in place is that if you've been seen to do this, when you come to apply for your pro card the following year, you'll actually get rejected because they have screenshots, they have photos, they have emails from athletes, other athletes that are trying to get their pro card that have written into the pro league to, you know, inform on them. So this is what I see a lot, is that there's athletes going around, IFBB pro athletes going around doing stuff that they don't realise that you, it's not about me investigating and researching everything. It's the people around you. It's social media. You can't get away with it anymore. The minute you do something like that that's in contravention to your pro league contract, somebody else is sending it to the pro league. You know, someone else is, you know, for want of a better word, snitching you up. So don't be surprised if next year that some of the pros that go to apply for their pro card get rejected, and then you have to go straight, you have to go back through the amateurs again. And as much as I don't want to name anyone in particular, but unfortunately that happened to someone during lockdown, where they entered, they're an IFBB pro, okay, they entered a WBFF online competition, and they won, and they won their WBFF pro card in that competition. And that was reported to the pro league, that an IFBB pro had entered another competition, whether it be online, whatever it is, it's with another federation. And when she went to apply for a pro card, she got rejected.
Yeah, I was going to say that, that's always been the rule. Like, that's always been the rule from, as I said, even like back in the day, even before 2016, that was always the rule, that once you earned your pro card, you were seen to be a professional. You shouldn't do, you know, you shouldn't be, i.e. promoting other federations, or, you know, just doing anything at other federations. I know that's always been the rule. So, like, people will blame Two Bros and sometimes you for that, but obviously they don't understand that, well, that's always been the rule. So you're just enforcing the rules of the NPC, really. That's all it is.
Well, like I said, I'm not actually enforcing any rules because they're not my rules. I'm just a promoter. But obviously I understand the rules and I get sent things, and it's my duty to send them on to the Pro League. And it's down to the Pro League whether they want to take an action, whether they feel it's severe enough. But like I said, sometimes they don't come to me. And if they don't come to me, they go straight to the Pro League, and then the Pro League contact me and say to me, do you know about this? So, you know, I'm not going to cover for anybody that didn't take the time or thought it was more important to throw aside all their hard work and everything in order to get a few extra likes on Instagram. You know, that's really what it comes down to, is that people get caught up in the attention and they seem to lose grip of what the, you know, what the pro status means, you know, because they feel that they're in demand and they feel that they need to answer that demand, when, you know, one of the hardest things in order to keep your integrity is to say no.
No, for sure.
And everyone always seems, you know, sometimes I'll phone these people to say to them, you know, listen, I don't want you getting in trouble. This isn't me telling you not to do it. Anybody can do whatever they want, but there's consequences. You know, and if I can help someone, I will. But people seem to get, well, should I say some people, they seem to get a bit like, oh, I can do what I want. And you can't tell me what to do. And I'm like, no, you're right, I can't. So I'm just trying to give you the heads up to save yourself, so you don't have that situation, you know, next year when you try to compete, when you try to register for a pro show and you get told no. So there's going to be a lot of surprises next year, because a lot of the behaviour of the pros has been reported, and I know most of it as well. So again, it just depends whether the pro league decide to take the action on the information that they've received. But don't be surprised if a lot of people who think they're pros suddenly realize they're not pros, and they've got to go back through the amateurs again,
which is tough on, in terms of trying to get your card back. You know, the amateurs out there nowadays are fantastic. So that's
all. Well, that particular person in question hasn't managed to receive her pro card back yet. That's how tough it is.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, everybody talks about how many pro cards are available and what have you, but it's still a small percentage of the amount of athletes that compete. You know, very small, and it's tough because, as you know, everybody's improving. So what might have got you through as a pro 2 years ago, guess what? Those people who were just coming into the industry have made huge, massive, great gains And obviously, because the industry's growing as well, where you might have won your pro card where there was 5 in a class, now you've got to win your pro card where there's 25 in a class. You know, so it is tougher. So it's about understanding the value of that particular card, and don't forget the hard work that it took for you to get there. You know, for the sake of going and handing a medal out at some 3 or 4 letter federation.
Yeah, for sure, I get that completely. So moving forward, here, we've seen the development of Two Bros. We spoke about the development of Two Bros. And again, I was privileged enough to go to the Arnold's and be a part of the Arnold's and be one of the sponsors for the Arnold's. The Arnold's was probably the biggest production of a show in Europe I've ever seen. Is that something, you know, is that something that's going to continue? How did that come about? You know, talk to us about the Arnold's and what, you know, and obviously I know you were there, of course, and what it meant to you and to see such a huge production at the Arnold's.
Well, funnily enough, it first came about literally at the Olympia in 2017 when I was having a conversation with Bob Lorimer, you know, literally a day after the split. And it was always a discussion that there was hope that there would be an Arnold Sports Festival in the UK. And literally that continued from 2017 up until, I think it was 2019 or 2020. No, 2019, it was actually announced in relation to the Expo. And obviously what the issue was at the time was because of some of the Arnolds were with the old UK, well, the Elite League they're called now, and some of the Arnolds were with the Pro League. So the organiser, Stephen and Manuel, they, you know, it's difficult to come into the bodybuilding industry and understand what the landscape is. So they were at first being told about all the different agendas from the different federations, so that they initially said, look, we just want to run the Expo for the first year and get it all run without any issues and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously it was agreed that we were going to sit down and meet on the for 2021. But then obviously the pandemic happened, and literally it was a decision made that in order to give the best experience for the spectators, they needed the best organisation involved. Because obviously in 2017, no one really knew how the split was going to go. Although, you know, it was obvious to anybody that was involved. But if you're not involved, that's what the difficulty is. So literally, we'd speak every couple of months and that, until it got to the point where it was like, okay, this is inevitable. This UK Arnold has to have bodybuilding and it has to be the Pro League. So taking into account I'm the promoter and obviously the representative for the Pro League and the NPC, it was inevitable that if they were going to put on the best show, exhibition, showcase for the first Arnold, it had to have the Pro League, obviously, and the NPC. So then the plans went into action and we just wanted to make sure we hit as big as we could in order to show our commitment to what bodybuilding meant to the Arnold Sports Festival. So by hook or crook and whatever went on in between time, it was all about getting everyone together to produce the best spectacle that not only the UK have seen, but the Arnolds have seen, because obviously the Arnolds in Spain was like, it had got worse and worse and worse and the production was terrible. So it was about showing, you know, not just the European athletes what could be done. It was also about showing Arnold Schwarzenegger what we could do in relation to, you know, the Spain show that was obviously was getting less and less footfall due to less and less passion was being put into. You know, the problem with the Spain one was it was another day at the office, and it was with the Elite League, as you know, they're getting smaller and smaller as we go. So yeah, that's how it came about. It was always talked about from 2017 to obviously fruition in 2021.
Awesome. And obviously I know, because obviously I followed you guys, it's actually going to be even bigger next year with more pro classes, definitely more numbers of competitors as well, which is going to be awesome.
Well, again, it's only in our nature, you know, to go from four shows to what have I got this year? 35. It's inevitable. Whatever you saw last year was just the toe in the water. Because again, we wanted to make sure that we'd done the best we could under the circumstances, but it was never too sure what was going to actually happen. And as soon as you do something once, same with prep, you know, as soon as you've done your first show, you go, right, okay, well, I could do this better and maybe I shouldn't have eaten that chocolate cake. But there's all these things that you immediately, I mean, as the show's going on, you see things that you can improve on. And as soon as the show finishes, you don't just like shut shop and go to sit. As soon as the show finishes, everybody's on the phone. Everybody's going, we can do this, we can do that. Now we know we can do this. So inevitably, it was always going to be bigger the second year than the first. And again, that's what we'll continue to do. As a goal, there's a 15,000-seater stadium at the NEC. That's our goal. We want to put on, within the next few years, the biggest pro show outside of the Olympia and amateur show to fill a 15,000-seat stadium.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible. What a goal to have as well, if you're listening to this as an amateur, within the next couple of years, not only being a professional and then going on to compete at such a prestigious show, event, in such a huge crowd. What a goal to have if you're listening to this as an amateur that you could really aspire to, for sure.
The thing is that, again, I'll say it again, no one else can offer that. You know, you can't go to whatever three-letter federation, four-letter get up, whatever it is, where you've got, you know, people that turn up for the weekend and they're really important and on a Monday they're working in the garden centre. We do this as a living, yeah? We do this full-time. The Arnolds, the Pro League, you know, obviously Two Bros, we have full-time staff. This is what we do, day in, day out. And sometimes 20-hour days, literally like in Denmark. You know? Yeah. That was a 20-hour day.
I've witnessed it. No, I've witnessed it firsthand, mate. I've witnessed it firsthand, so I can tell you how true that is. And if it's not just one 20-hour day either, those are back-to-back days as well.
Oh, it's, like I said, for the last sort of part of October, I can't remember having a day off, literally. It just didn't work. It wasn't feasible. There's always something that's happening that you have to organise in advance to make sure everything's in place. It's not just, you know, from the athlete's point of view, we want you to just turn up and just step on stage. That's simple. But in order to achieve that, we have to put a lot of organisation and a lot of work. And the trouble is because of the registration process, it's always a lot of organisation last minute for us. And that's why next year we're going to close all, registrations 2 weeks before the event. And the reason we want to do that is not to, you know, cause any issues. It's in order to be able to organise better, to make sure that the athletes have a better time. Because in the old days, everybody used to turn up 9 o'clock in the morning and there'd be 200-300 people lulling around backstage. It was mayhem. And everybody was tired. Everybody was getting in each other's ways. It was a real mess. And then you'd compete, you'd wait all day to step on stage for 5 minutes to then come back at 6-7 o'clock at night. You're dehydrated, you're starving. And then to find out that you didn't make the top five or you didn't make the top three. You know, it was grueling. And on top of that, you've got the spectators. And I can imagine from your side of things, you would be there all day, just milling around. And it was a drag. So now, again, with the, you know, what happened in COVID, we are able to show people the benefit of coming in at a certain time, pumping up, getting on stage and going. Because we know you don't want to hang around all day. Your spectators don't want to hang around all day. I mean, well, whose mum and dad wants to sit in a venue for 14 hours waiting for their daughter or son to come on for literally 4 or 5 minutes? You know, all the hard work's been done. They've suffered you for 16 weeks prior to that. And then they've got to drag out 12-hour day to watch you come on stage. You know, I think what happened in the old days is people got to the point where they didn't care whether they won or lost. They just wanted to go.
No, I agree. Yeah, I agree completely. I remember doing my first show back in 2011, and it was exactly what you say. You turn up in the morning, you register in the morning, you get on stage, you do pre-judging, you wait all evening. And I didn't leave the venue till 11 p.m. And I got there at 8:30 in the morning. And yeah, by that time, you're sort of just like, oh, I just want to go home and have something to eat. So yeah, absolutely. It's definitely streamlined, slick, a very clear, precise process now, and very, very smooth for the athletes now.
One of the lessons we learned was there was the Mr. JT Grand Prix and the natural show in one day, because we thought they would be a small show. And then what happened is about a week or two out, suddenly both of them shows got absolutely saturated with athletes, and they could have had a whole day on their own. And yet we'd already booked it. So we understand that the people that have already booked hotels, travel, days off work, all of that kind of stuff, we can't just move it because of the effect that it has on everyone. So again, what we have to do is a tough job we've got to do is try and organize it to make it as stress-free and, you know, smooth as possible, but we haven't got the time to do it. You know, we didn't get the time to do it. So now what we're putting in place is registration will close 2 weeks beforehand, simply because if what we've got with the venues is that they've now allowed us that if we do get crushed in terms of athlete numbers, we don't want to put more than 250 through in a day, because it starts to encroach on their experience. So 2 or 3 weeks out, we'll be able to see what sort of numbers by athletes registering, committing to work out whether we're going to have to put on a couple of divisions the next day in order to make sure everybody gets their fair time on stage and gets their experience. So our main message to everyone this year is, if you want a stress-free day, if you want the best experience possible, don't leave it last minute to register. Because if we don't get the use of the theatre the next day, we're going to close registration. And we're only going to close it 2 or 3 weeks out, because it's not fair on the athletes that have already registered. And we've done that in Denmark. Yeah. You know, it caused a lot of upset, but it just wasn't fair. You know, I could have had another 200 athletes in Denmark, but it just wasn't fair on the people that had registered. It's not fair to have to rush people through and make sure, because remember, this isn't about us rushing people through. The venue doesn't have license in order to stay open. You know, the amount of times last year that we've had, listen, you need to finish now because we're going to turn the lights off. You know, our license doesn't allow it. And I could never say to, you know, the last four classes in bikini, oh, sorry, we've got to turn the lights off. You know, you're going to have to come to the next show. Could you imagine how upset people would be? And it would all be our fault, you know. So what I'm trying to do is make people understand that none of it's our fault, because we've got other restrictions in place that we need to adhere to. So in order to not get anywhere near that, register early so we can organize the day for you. You know, the reason we do check-ins the day before is to organize the day for you, to make sure that everybody gets their time on stage. Because I think you'll probably remember this, check-ins used to be on the same day with the and it was just like, for me, I used to think, how do you know how long check-ins are going to take? How do you know how many people are going to turn up? And then you've got to run a show from that point onwards.
Yeah,
it was a disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was the way that things are run now are so much smoother in terms of coming the day before, you know, even things like getting your base coat of tan the day before and stuff like that. Like they just make the experience so much easier for athletes, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
You know, we don't do this to try and put people out or try and make it easier for ourselves. Everything is taken into account in order to make sure that the day runs smoother. You know, we don't want bikini girls turning up 10 o'clock in the morning when the bodybuilders are on, because, you know, everyone's walking around stark bollock naked. You know, we don't want the girls laying there all day being stepped on. We don't want them to be in that environment. That's again why we separate the two. We don't want girls stripping off and men stripping off in the same area. It's just not comfortable. So we separate them. We try and make sure that everybody comes in at the time, so they're not hanging around, so they're not causing disruption to the people that are already there. Because when you've got 50 people laying on the floor all day, it really makes things difficult, you know, in order to be able to have some space to pump up. There's so many reasons why we do what we do, and it's none of it's for our purpose. You know, what we put in place is for your purpose, the athlete. So sometimes people get a little bit upset by things, but we've got, what we're trying to do is we're trying to cater to the majority. Okay, we're never going to keep everyone happy, but we're trying to keep as many people happy as possible. So there's always going to be the odd person here and there that what we do just doesn't fit with them. But we stick to what we do because we know at the moment that's the best way we can do it.
No, I agree. I agree. And the thing is, people don't realize and understand how many pieces of the puzzle there is. And until like, for example, people will hear you speak, they won't realize that, you know, you have to follow NPC rules, you have to follow venue rules, you have to follow COVID rules, you have to follow local authority rules, you have to follow all of these different rules. And sometimes those rules are conflicting as well. They're conflicting rules just between the two of them. So all of a sudden now you're in the middle who's trying to cater for the athlete, the venue, the NPC, the local council, the judges, the spectators. Like there's all
the
these
coaches.
People, the coaches, yeah, as well. Yeah, they're the worst ones. But yeah, you've got all of these people that you need to then cater for as well. And again, some of those are definitely conflicting as well.
It's just finding a balance, okay? That's what we're trying to do. Find a balance between all the different agendas, you know, and that's really what it comes down to. We appreciate everybody's got an agenda and we're trying to balance between them, you know. Even when it comes down to some shows, you know, we can let the athletes in to watch the show themselves. But we've got venue numbers. If we've sold 500 tickets and there's COVID rules, we have to make a decision that the athletes, the 300 athletes that are backstage, can't come into the auditorium because the venue numbers won't allow it. So it seems like we're being unfair, but it's like on this occasion, we can't. If we've got 150 athletes backstage and there's 200 in the audience, by all means, come through. But we have to make that decision based on what's going on for that situation. You know, some people go, oh, last month we were allowed to come and watch. And it's like, there's 500 people sitting there. They're clicking people in and out. If the council turn up, they're going to shut the show because you want to go in there. And once they go in there, once one athlete goes, they all want to go in there.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you've got an even bigger problem where you've got too many people in. And if the council turn up, they shut the show down. Then you've upset the other 100 athletes. The next 400 spectators that are coming in, you know. So I know some people have walked away feeling a little bit unhappy with certain things, but again, they're decisions made on our tools that we've been provided. You know, sometimes we're handcuffed and we can't do what we'd really like to do. So, and I'm sure people feel a bit aggrieved by that sometimes, but if I can get every single person into that venue and everyone can have a great day, fantastic. It's not about money. It's about trying to please everyone and being fair to everyone as well.
Yeah, but also in terms of a business perspective, again, like, you know, Ian, I run businesses, you run businesses. What we also know is when we do please X amount of people, it generally creates a revenue, which again, unfortunately, some people do get a little bit upset about, is that we do create a revenue. But the reason that we create a revenue is because the customer experience is great. And when the customer experience is great, people will talk about it, they'll come, and so on and so forth. So people, as I said.
So I'll always ask the same question. See, one of the things that I get that sort of is difficult for me is information, getting information out there. Yeah. Sometimes I don't need to explain myself to people. I don't feel that I have to explain. But when we get various negative comments about the cost of this and the cost of that, I'm never going to put out exactly what I have to pay out. Okay. And at the same time, nor does anybody. And then when we get people, you know, beating on us about finances, what makes me die is not one single person who says anything about finances would do what I do for free. They wouldn't do what I do for free. And at the same time, they also wouldn't go to their work and work for free. So you get these people who come out with their opinions about this should be done and this is expensive and that's expensive. And I always say, would you go to work for free? Would you spend your 5 days a week, 9 till 5, and not get paid for it? And no one would.
No, 100%. And as I said, even beyond that, mate, you know, you, as I said, businesses, you provide a great service, you deserve to be paid for that service, no matter what line of work you are in, whether you're in events management, which in essence what the Two Bros is, it's Two Bros Events, whether you're in personal training, whether you're in coaching, whatever field that you're in, IT, if you're good at what you do and you provide a good service, then you'll be paid for that service. And again, where people are a little bit, get their knickers in a twist about that, is that the better that they do, the more they'll get paid. And again, if somebody said to them, well, actually, no, that's not right, you should be paid the same as everybody else, then they would soon kick up a fuss about that. So yeah, it's always one of those things that do make me laugh when I see that.
It does, you know, everybody earns money out of this industry, but I'm expected to do this for free. You've got your supplement companies, you've got your coaches, you've got your apparel companies, you've got the venue, you've got tanning, you've got all of these different things, gyms benefit from us, you know, marketing, everything, except we're scorned because we're running it as a business, which, let's get it straight, I don't know, unless it's a charity, which I've never said we are, and let's get it straight, even charity people who work for charities get paid from the charity.
Yeah,
we're never going to do this for free because you cannot. Mm-hmm. And the prices we charge are based on our costs. And instead of people having the idea that we charge as much as we can, what you got to realize is we actually charge as least as we can.
Yes.
We actually try to keep the costs low in order to cover our costs, you know? And that's what other federations don't have. They don't have sanction fees. They don't have all these different costs that I have to incur, you know? A lot of these other federations don't even pay for judging. They don't even pay for the people that work at the show. Every single person that is involved with Two Bros is financially rewarded. Okay? Simple as that. Nobody, and I don't expect and never would expect anyone to do anything for free.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, I completely agree.
That's why the people who work at the shows aren't doing it because they're doing it for free and they just love being involved. I make it very clear to anybody that works at the shows, you are there to service a job role, and your job role is to make sure that the customers, which are the athletes, are looked after as best as possible. If you swear at the athletes, if you're rude to them, it's the same as any other job with customers, you'll be fired.
Mm.
Okay? We understand that they're, you know, dehydrated, they're tired, you know, because that's what they are at that point. And I've seen athletes that are, you know, grumpy and what have you. The following day, they're different people. They're normal people again. So they don't deserve to be treated anything. They need to be understood as to what their current mentality is and nurtured and looked after, you know. And that's what I make sure that all my staff understand that and not to take anything personally.
No, absolutely. Completely agree. I'm conscious of your time, Ian. So just one thing, last final question. Is there anything else that you would like to add if people who are listening to this are thinking about competing with Two Bros, are thinking about getting on stage, want to earn their pro card? Is there anything else that you would like to add to them? I know it's been a great podcast so far, but anything else that you'd like to add?
Do your homework. You know, all the information's out there. Look on the website. Look on the NPC News Online. Just do your homework. That's all you need to do. Before you listen to people that have got other agendas, try and work out who you should listen to and who you shouldn't. Because everybody who's not involved with us will say something negative about us. We never speak about anybody else. We don't say anything in specific about other people, other federations and what have you. Everybody's free to compete wherever they want. All I'm saying is do your homework yourself. Don't listen to gossip in the gym. Don't listen to gossip from other people with their hidden agendas. Just do your homework.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd agree on that as well in every aspect. Competing, posing, tanning, coaches, do that for sure, 100%. Yeah, sound bit of advice. Ian, thanks ever so much for your time. I very much appreciate it. How can people follow you, Ian, get in contact with you about shows and so on and so forth?
Everything. You can DM us. We answer DMs. We've got people that are paid to answer the DMs and give people as much information as possible. All the information's on our website. You know, it's all there if you just put yourself out to research it. Research it like you would going on a holiday. Research it like you would starting a new job or looking to start a new career. You know, it's there. Research it. Everything's there. Because that's one of my toughest things is getting information across to people. You know, amount of DMs that we get that says, oh, well, a friend in the gym told me this, but I thought I'd ask. And the first thing we do is thank God you asked.
Yeah.
And didn't just listen to someone. Because we are the source of all the information and we'll give it to you correctly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ian, again, thank you ever so much for your time. Guys and girls, please like, subscribe, comment, share, and we'll go from there. Thanks ever so much.
Thanks, Rob. See you soon.